Tom Woods Show, episode 1694.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Folks, by now you've probably noticed that news about the virus is almost always fact-free hysteria these days. So you need my brand new free ebook, Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About the Lockdown. Go pick it up at wrongaboutlockdown.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Angela McArdle is back with us today. I wanted to talk about what happened last week at the Libertarian Convention in Orlando. And Angela was there and can tell us all about it. We've spoken to Angela before. She chairs the Libertarian Party of Los Angeles County and is, I don't know, one of the most energetic people I know in this movement. I would compare her with Michael Heiss, who seems to have endless energy. She's one of a, I would say, just a small handful of people who seems unstoppable in terms of her energy levels and accomplishments. So I figure, given that she can juggle a million things, why not ask her to do one more thing and appear here on the Tom Woods Show with an update on what's going on in the party. Angela, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
All right. We're going to talk about the Libertarian Convention, the in-person version of the Libertarian Convention, which just concluded a matter of days ago. And I wanted to get a report from somebody who had been there and particularly a friend. And well, you fit both requirements. So let's talk about what happened. First of all, this was a partly online, partly in-person convention. And I know that there was a bit of controversy about that. Can we just explain what that was all about? Because I have a friend, Facebook friend, who was very, very much against the in-person convention. I mean, very much. And I think I would describe him as a left libertarian, but he says, you know, I don't always agree with Woods, but I could listen to him talk all day. That's my kind of guy. You know, I have no objection to this person. But anyway, he was dead set against it. I mean, for all kinds of reasons. And he thought it was impractical. It just had all kinds of objections to it. So what was the actual argument all about?
Well, it's about your favorite topic in the whole wide world, which is coronavirus.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. Ready? So months ago, there was a quote-unquote plot to make the entire convention online and under the guise of it being coronavirus, but it was also alleged that there were a certain faction of people in leadership in the party who wanted to shift participation online because the pragmatists and anti-Mises caucus people in the party were not going to show up in person due to coronavirus. And they were very afraid that the Mises caucus and their allies, like a lot of the radical people, were going to show up and quote-unquote take over the convention. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm saying it, but I'll tell you, a lot of people on the LNC said this just straight from their mouths, and they are pragmatist. They have always ideologically been prags. They have not been our allies, but lo and behold, it turns out they're actually very principled people, and they were right to blow the whistle on this. So there was a whole lot of fighting over that, and it ended up that only about, on the first day of business, 186 people showed up in person. I wish I could give you more numbers on how many more people showed up throughout the days, but the credentialing reports were not forthcoming very quickly. And when they did come, they seemed to sort of drop on and off and not be particularly accurate.
Well, can you say something about when you use the term pragmatists?
Oh,
not sure. Everybody knows what that means in the party context.
So the party is split into factional sections and also actual caucuses. And pragmatists tend to favor incrementalism in their messaging and their methodology. Some of them lean left and some of them lean right, but they all agree that, according to them, liberty isn't going to happen all overnight. So they're more willing to make concessions on libertarian messaging and principles in order to get people elected, in theory.
Okay. So that's where they're coming from. And a lot of those people are the kind of people who scolded us for not wanting Bill Weld as the nominee in 2020.
Correct. Yeah. That is absolutely correct. They all are willing to back Bill Weld. Even after Bill Weld, you know, ditched the party, they were still trying to get him in at the last minute. Come back. Save us, Bill Weld. So,
oh my gosh, have some dignity already. You know, the guy's just kicked sand in your face. Take it like a man and move on.
I know.
Jeez, all right.
Unhealthy.
So, all right. So then the whole thing turned into, well, what happens now that we are in person? What happens to the delegates who might want to participate remotely?
Well, it was very interesting. The first thing that happened is we saw very clearly that there is a new ideological split in the party. Instead of just Mises Caucus versus Prags, or you know, all of the other little factional disagreements, the new ideological split is people that respect the party's bylaws and aren't afraid of coronavirus versus people that don't respect the bylaws, are very afraid of the virus, and think that attending convention is a NAP violation. So that sets the stage for the big fight that we had on the first day with the online controversy. So the first day of business was absolute chaos, and we got, I believe, nothing done. And so we're all fighting over whether or not people are allowed to participate online, right? Now, if you are familiar with Robert's Rules of Order, which I imagine that no one is, Robert's Rules of Order is a technical way to argue about stuff that will bore and confuse anyone who doesn't know what's going on. And I don't recommend that you read up on it unless you absolutely have to, because it is tedious and a waste of your personal time. But, you know, that's the weapon we had. So we wielded it at each other for about 9 hours. All the while, the online app that was designed specifically for this crashed and did not work because it was not scalable. And I got to tell you that the guy who worked on this thing, he worked so hard in a period of about 3 weeks, maybe four. He did not take sides in this. He just tried to present a solution to a problem. But who in their right mind can be expected to make something work for over 1,000 people in 3 weeks when you're writing it from scratch? So that completely crashed, and that sort of contributed to the chaos that was the first day, which was a complete waste of everyone's time and attention headache for probably about 1,000 people.
Oh, good grief. All right. Well, so once day two starts and you can actually get some business underway, what do you have to report to us about
that?
Oh, boy.
So I believe the second day started off with the notorious compromise called the McArdle Amendment, which is ridiculous because plenty of people make motions all the time, but that's what our glorious former chair decided to call it, which was that I moved to exclude the online delegates from the convention so that the in-person delegates wouldn't be violating the bylaws. We could amend the bylaws to allow them in for this convention only, and then they could come back and vote. And I'm sure you can imagine that people screamed bloody murder, that everybody in person was trying to kick out everyone online. It was a big, ugly fight. But after some time passed, we actually did make it work. And all of the people online who thought that we were just evil and trying to kick them out of the party and disenfranchise them were just wrong. I don't believe a single person objected vocally to allowing everyone to vote. We just were trying to do it the right way. And the reason that's important is because it can open us up to litigation potentially. Some states could lose ballot access. And there were angry people in the party who wanted to sue because allowing people to participate online was a violation of the bylaws. So really the whole point was to, yeah, we're going to allow everyone to participate. This has already been promised, even though it shouldn't have been, but we're going to do it the right way and respect our own organization's rules and then just get on with the day. So it was a fight, but we did make it happen.
Okay. Now there was a little bit of drama, I think, between you and the outgoing chair.
Oh, there sure was. So after I made this amendment to the credentialing report, which that's really what I'm talking about. This whole thing was allowing the online people to participate after I made this little amendment. He screamed profanity from the microphone. This was not the first incident of him screaming profanity at this convention either. So I won't repeat it on your show, but it's up. It's up on YouTube for anyone who's curious. Day two.
Oh, and was this because he was unhappy with, why exactly was he unhappy with you?
Oh, yeah. He was angry that the Mises Caucus and everyone in person, we were just absolute tyrants for saying that people online didn't have a right to participate in the convention, which is not what we were saying. We were saying that according to the bylaws, everyone has to be in person, physically present, to participate in the convention, as has been the case since the founding of the party. This is nothing exciting and shocking and new. This is just how it is. And so he thought that we were just going to be evil tyrants, kick everyone out and not let them back in and take over the party. which is clearly not what happened. So when the in-person delegates voted overwhelmingly to go through the process to do it the right way, he thought he'd have a temper tantrum and scream profanity at me or everyone. We're not really sure, but he was quite angry.
Tell me about what happened with our friend Maj.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, the first day of convention was, honestly, I'm not sure if it was technically Wednesday or Thursday. The first day of business was Thursday, but Wednesday night there was a welcoming ceremony and there was also at the same time a Mises Caucus bash. We had a great event. I spoke, Jessica Sentman spoke, Miguel Duque, Michael Heiss, and finally Maj spoke, and he did a great job, and he talked about how we need to get the message across to urban voters by speaking authentically. And he said that Democrats and Republicans are just so insane right now that the general public is dying for your message. It was great. Nick Sarwark saw fit to...
Oh, actually, wait. Before we get into that, let me make sure everybody remembers who Maj Touré is. He ran for Philadelphia City Council as a Libertarian in 2019. And he's associated with something called Black Guns Matter. So he's a gun rights activist and with a focus particularly on blacks and emphasizing the importance of gun ownership and the nefarious origins of gun control laws and educating people about issues like this. And he had gotten a little bit of pushback. He was supposed to speak, I guess, talk about that? He was supposed to get a speaking slot at the convention, and then they wound up asking him not to be there. And I think it was because he speaks the way, you know, a guy in the streets of Philly might speak, and this was not quite delicate enough for some people in the party.
That is definitely the case, and he said some stuff that was perceived to be anti-immigrant. I actually took it that he was explaining how people in what he calls the hood felt, that these are the sentiments of people who live in urban areas about immigration. They feel disenfranchised and pushed out. I take it sort of as a don't shoot the messenger sort of experience, that we need to be able to listen to people who are talking about their experience living in urban areas, and that their experiences are not going to reflect libertarian values all the time, and that's because they haven't been exposed to them. So I was not offended, but a lot of people were really offended. And, you know, it's interesting because we always talk about doing outreach to demographics that are the minority in our party. But when those demographics speak out and they express a grievance, instead of listening and trying to change their minds with persuasion, we clutch our pearls and scream and try to eject them. And I believe that's what happened with Maj. So after a big kerfuffle at the national level, he was disinvited. And Daniel Hayes made the call, although I don't believe that it was Daniel Hayes' decision. I think Daniel Hayes tried to get in front of it and just sort of end the drama. There was a lot of apology and back talk. I know that Michael Heiss of the Mises Caucus had worked really hard with Maj, and he was trying to keep him on. But, you know, sometimes things just fall apart. The good news, though, is that Maj has not written us off. He came and he spoke at our event. He was warm and friendly. And he had a really great message. So it is unfortunate that the former chair of the party was so hostile to him. And he was definitely, our former chair was definitely inebriated when the incident happened. And it did involve a lot of swearing and profanity and ultimately ejection by security.
Oh, okay. So I cut you off when you were telling the story. So Maj said such and such, and then what was the response from the former chair?
Nick responded with a profanity chant. To eat something. You know, it wasn't very polite. And on and on. And finally, there was removal.
But see, I heard that Maj was interrupting or shouting, like, during the actual proceedings when the chair was trying to speak. Did I hear that wrong? Because if so, he shouldn't have done that.
Oh, well, if that happened, I was not in the room.
Okay, then I may well have misheard it. Maybe I was hearing it from a partisan of one side.
That's really curious.
If that's not the case, then all the better.
Sure, and I wasn't in the room literally every single moment. So if that happened, you know, my apologies for leaving it out, but I genuinely did not see that.
Okay, and it could well be. So then that happened, and now that got spread around on social media pretty quickly. after it happened. So some of us who weren't there were able to find out about some of the, let's say, less edifying aspects of things.
Right.
All right. So let's talk about, before we get to how everything turned out, you're part of the Mises Caucus, and it's no secret that I am sympathetic to the Mises Caucus, and I donate to them, and I'm in the group, and all that. And it's not, obviously not associated with the nonprofit Mises Institute, as people erroneously believe. It's led by the great Michael Heiss, one of the most energetic people you could imagine in any party. He was just saying on Facebook, I won't give too many details because it is his private Facebook page, but he recently had an opportunity in his professional life. He'll have a job that will give him enough downtime that he can be making calls for the Mises Caucus during his downtime at work. And it's just unbelievable to me that somebody would think that way. It reminds me of when I was, it reminds me of me when I was younger, when I had that kind of energy. So a great guy. So I want to know about, what was the morale of the Mises Caucus? They had a bash there. Tell us about that.
It was really great. We seemed to be the caucus that brought a really great attitude. We were good vibes. We had an event that everyone was invited to. Even our haters weren't ejected until there was a legitimate, issue going on. People were friendly. They were happy to see us. We had several new joins then and there on the spot once people got to meet us and get to know us in a smaller, it's still, hundreds of people, but it's a little bit more intimate setting, 200 people versus 900 people. It was just fantastic. All throughout the votes, throughout lunch, throughout parties and get-togethers in the evenings, it was just a really good vibe. And we got a lot of support. Our percentage in votes went up considerably. I believe we made up, according to vote totals and the numbers that we counted, over 30% of the delegates, which is an incredible achievement considering that the caucus has been organized for less than 3 years. That now we're making up 30% of the delegation. Like, that's really impressive.
That absolutely is. And I, of course, want to talk about what the ultimate results of the convention were. We'll do that after this quick break. Folks, 2020 has been, a bit of a bummer so far. But let's make the most of it by exploring new skills, deepening existing passions, and broadening our horizons. With classes on Skillshare, you can learn about illustration, design, photography, video, marketing, entrepreneurship, productivity, and a whole lot more. And when you browse on Skillshare, which I am so proud to have as a sponsor, you're going to find things you wouldn't have thought of. For example, filmmaking from home, turn found footage into a compelling video, or how to study for an exam. On this program, you've heard several of my daughters talk about art classes they've taken on Skillshare and the advances they made thanks to those classes. And these are short classes that are a perfect fit for your busy routine. You'll create real projects, get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish real growth. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get 2 free months of premium membership. That's 2 months free at Skillshare.com/woods. Well, the key thing we all want to know about, of course, it's interesting to hear about drama and all the stuff that went on, but is what were the results and what happened? Obviously, I had an interest in the election of the chairman of the Libertarian National Committee. So why don't we start with that?
All right. Well, we did have to cede that Joseph Bishop Hinchman won chair. He won with, I don't recall his exact percentage. Josh came in second. He had 36%, which is a pretty large jump up from 2018 when he ran and got 22%. So that was a chair race. And it was quite emotional.
Well, I heard, I didn't get a chance to see it. I was actually out in Las Vegas where we were supposed to have Freedom Fest the following week, and they pulled the rug out from under that at the very last minute. But I heard that Joshua Smith did very well in the debate.
Oh, he crushed that debate. There's absolutely no contest on that. Josh did so well in the debate. He was really articulate and level-headed. He was really inspiring. And, his competition was just, and I don't mean to, speak ill of anyone, but it was low energy. Josh's discussions and the points that he made in the debate were absolutely inspiring and are the kind of things that you want to hear when you consider joining a party that maybe you've been on the fence about for a couple of years, talking about leadership and growth and demonstrated results and not stuff that's sort of on the fringe or theoretical. Here's what I did 10 years ago, but here's what I've done in the last 2 years in the party. You can see for yourself. And that is honestly the kind of leadership that we need in the party right now. I don't really want to hear about what a great job you did at a nonprofit 5 years ago. It's so different to run a political organization. There's no tax write-offs for Libertarian Party donations, you know?
Well, do you feel like you want to say something? I mean, I'll say this. I don't know anything about Joe Bishop Henchman. And I know people who like him, and not all of them are the world's biggest fans of old Woods here. But I'm not going to let silliness like that get in the way. I do think it sounds ridiculous, but I think Bishop Henchman's a badass name. I'll just say that at the very least. I wouldn't mind having that as my name. What do you think of him? What are your impressions?
Well, they're mixed. So he's not a charismatic person. He keeps his head down. It looks like he does work a good amount. I'm not really sure. Let's see. Where do I go from this? He's definitely not confrontational and snarky, which I appreciate. And he does not pick fights with people who disagree with him on social media. And I think that that is going to be a really nice change over the next 2 years. But he does not inspire me in any sort of call to action. He is not an energetic speaker. He doesn't seem like someone who's going to actively work to push us out, but he does not seem so far like he wants to do anything to include the Mises Caucus. So that's kind of a bummer.
I hear that. And I wonder, I'm thinking about the chairman of the two major parties. And, I guess they go on television a lot and they represent the party in that way. But really the party's strength comes from its candidates. Right. I mean, so in a sense, could you argue that it doesn't matter that much how much energy the chair has? I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Sure. I think that's a good position to take, and I hope that that's the case. A lot of the strength from the party comes from how well our activists are able to generate funding and support for our candidates. So we may get a lot of great candidates, but if they don't have the funding to get where they need to be in local elections, that's a problem. And a lot of that energy is drummed up from fundraising that is directed by people on national, even if the national party isn't donating. And so I'm hopeful that that is going to continue, that national is going to continue to help down ticket candidates, but it remains to be seen. We have a lot of great activists on the national level. And as long as they continue to feel supported by the national XCOM, I think that they'll continue to do well.
Let's talk about other results, because obviously it's not just the chair who's elected at the convention. So what about other slots and other positions? How did it all turn out from our point of view, frankly?
Oh, sure. So Ken Mulman was elected vice chair. Ken is a solid guy. He's not a Mises Caucus member, but he's definitely an ally and a supporter. He's a very reasonable and fair-minded person, and he's been absolutely willing to work with us and advise us and sort of include us on his vision for the party. So I'm really happy with him. Karen Ann Harlos was reelected secretary, and she won, I believe, with over a 50% majority, but she had a fight. I did her nomination speech, and I did the best dang job that I could possibly do. I gave her, a high-energy endorsement, and she spoke and she got, we both got like applause on that one, which made me feel really good about the in-person delegates. And her opposition, a guy named Evan, she is so gracious and offered to take him on as assistant secretary because she just has a wonderful attitude. He came pretty close. He had over 40%, I believe, in votes. And he had a lot of people come up and give very short nominating speeches for him, including the infamous Nick Sarwark. So that was a nail biter, but the Mises Caucus came out on top with that.
Let me say something about that, because I've had Karen Ann Harlos on my program, and I wouldn't say I agree with her on everything, but I would say she is a hardcore libertarian who absolutely believes in our message. And I have seen her take positions that are not coming from loyalty to particular individuals or partisanship, but just from her sense of fair play. And she has put herself in the line of fire repeatedly. out of what appears to be a genuine sense of fair play. And I find it impossible not to respect that.
I completely agree. And that's why I wanted to do a nominating speech for her, because she is maybe the most principled person I know. She is willing to go down in flames or take one for the team, be the unpopular person in order to speak the truth, or take the principled and unpopular position when she's defending liberty and defending the delegates. And she kept us informed. Whenever there was anything shady going on with the national committee, we knew because of her. She was the one who was alerting people and keeping the people who have a financial and emotional, you know, principled interest in the party aware of what was going on. So we are really lucky to have her.
Okay. Now I interrupted you. What about other positions?
Oh, Tim Hagan was reelected as treasurer. I don't have a lot of thoughts on him. No one ran against him because treasurer is a very difficult, tedious job that comes with personal financial liability if you mess it up. So, you know, that happened. And then for at-large, Joshua Smith was reelected as an at-large member. These are like filling, for people who aren't aware, at-large would just be filling the rest of the positions on your executive committee. And Richard Longstreth, he is an okay guy. Laura Ebke and Eric Rodsep. Eric was someone that the Mises Caucus supported. He is a little bit more pragmatic, but he is very friendly with the caucus. Laura Ebke is a former senator from Nebraska, I believe. She switched to Libertarian. She switched party midterm and lost.
Now, of course, you mean state senator, just so before people get their hopes up.
Laura, I believed, you know, honestly, I'm not sure. I thought it was federal, but I could be totally wrong.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's state senate.
State? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that would be like the most glorious event in the history of mankind. It would have been bigger than a mosh if she had come around, but all the same.
Okay. So she switched midterm and she lost, but she still stuck with us, which was, I found to be, you know, really impressive and a testament to her libertarian principles. She's definitely a pragmatist. I am really happy that we have her in the party. A lot of the comments on our internal party, you know, social media groups and just some of her own commentary demonstrate that she is staunchly pragmatic and a little bit unfriendly to the Mises Caucus. So that is a disappointment, but I am eternally optimistic that we can build bridges with her because she does seem like a reasonable person. And I think that she is genuinely a libertarian. Oh, man. And the last one, everyone get ready to have feels about this, was that Valerie Sarwark was elected as an at-large member, Nick Sarwark's wife. Is she a cookie cutter of Nick? No. Is she from the same factory? Yes. So it will be an interesting couple of years.
Okay. Now, aren't there other lesser positions too that are like committees and stuff?
The committees were not elected. The last positions that were elected would be the Judicial Committee.
That's what I was thinking, because I thought that came up. I was surprised to see Mary Ruart in there.
Yes. So we've got Mary Ruart, Jim Turney, D. Frank Robinson, Tom Arnold. Oh, my memory is escaping me right now. There is one other. Oh, Alicia Mattson. She is a pragmatist, but I got to tell you, boy, did she stick her neck out and form a principled alliance with the Mises Caucus.
I heard that. Yeah, I heard that. That's great.
She is great.
Those other names, as far as I know, are all solid people.
They are solid people. And then here's the wild card. Are you ready for this? Vermin Supreme.
I saw that. How about that?
I don't even know what to make of it, but okay. That's how it went down. So
if he's going to show up and do the work, all right.
And the good news for all of these people is that there's going to be very little work to do because the Judicial Committee usually doesn't have much going on during the years. Judicial Committee handles disputes between the party when they've been really escalated and you've got to appeal something that the Executive Committee did, something of that nature, pretty extreme stuff. And that thankfully hasn't happened a lot frequently, recently.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. So overall then, as you walk away from this, what do you say to somebody who says, well, this was a defeat for the Mises Caucus and you guys are just trying to put a happy face on it, but it's clearly a defeat. I've had friends of mine try to put that spin on it. How would you answer them?
Oh, I completely understand what they're saying, but let's look at the progress that we've made in 3 years. We are now a third of the delegation. if we maintain the same level of growth that we maintained during the last 2 years, we will be more than half of the party at the next convention. More than half. It will be a Mises Caucus slate of people elected. Our presidential candidate is going to be a principled person, a Mises Caucus endorsed candidate. So if you're feeling a little bit disenfranchised, if you're feeling a little bummed out or sad or defeated, take some time to lick your wounds. Don't forget to renew your membership. If you haven't joined yet, join at least a year in advance so that you can get in time to be a voting delegate. You need to get voted in by your state party. And let's make this happen, because that's the trend right now. We are going up and up and up, and it's measurable, demonstrated success. Just look at the numbers.
Well, of course, if you do want to do that and get involved, naturally you want to join through Woods' link here, because maybe that says a little something about our strength. And that link is, what else would it be? TomWoods.com/LP. So you should go ahead and do that. I'm trying to think of our show notes page today, which would be TomWoods.com/1694. I'll include that link to join the party. But I wonder, is there anything that I should be posting there? Any maybe reports about it or clips from the convention or anything you think worth putting on there?
I imagine that the vote results are all up on lp.org, and the Libertarian Party's YouTube channel has video of every single day of business. And then, of course, if you're in the Mises Caucus group, you can see video clips from the bash in their Facebook group.
Okay, so I'll figure out how I'm going to handle TomWoods.com/1694. I want to just make sure that I've let you say everything you want to say and get everything off your chest that you want to before I let you go. So are there any final comments you want to make, or do you feel satisfied we've covered everything?
I think that's about it. I just want to remind everyone that if you're complaining, if you want to see things change in the world, to take that human action, be the one to make things happen. Because the more of us get together and work to achieve liberty in our lifetime, the more likely it's going to come true.
Well, right on. Well, thanks so much, Angela, for all the work you do and for talking to me today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, as we head into the weekend, I'm going to give you a little homework assignment. If you have not completed this already, make sure and check out my brand new ebook, The Problems with the Police and How to Fix Them, A Libertarian Perspective. Caution Nothing has some of our best voices on this subject in there. You can get it over at problemswithpolice.com. And in the U.S., you can also get it by texting the word brutality to the number 33444. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.